Scallop Committee report, tab 4.
Tab
Dr.
5.
Pierce.
Okay. Tab 5, Mr. Chairman, I think.
Tab 5? Tab 5.
I'm sorry, that's under my 5, so...
Your 5's...
Shoot. 5
your
is empty.
Look like 5, so...
Right. Whatever. Scallops. So, as indicated in tab 4, since the November 2010 council meeting, we have no scallop-related meetings, none at all. Staff submitted Amendment 15 on December 6 and Framework 21 on January 13. Our purpose here today is to initiate Framework 23. In that tab, we have two documents, number one and number two. Number one is background information for initiation of Framework 23. And... we have a presentation that will be provided by Deirdre. Best thing for me to do is to be quiet and let her give her presentation. After she's done, I have a couple of motions to make relative to the framework and council action that we believe needs to be initiated. So, Deirdre, if you would, please.
Thank you, David. Document number two is my presentation. It is very brief. We're in the interest of catching up some time. Today, as David mentioned, is to initiate Scallop Framework 23. The first slide, the purpose and need. The council already said at the November council meeting, November 2010, you already identified these three main objectives for this action. So hopefully, if the framework stays pretty specific, we'll be able to finish development of this framework in the next few months and hopefully have final action on this come September. The first two items on the list were identified originally by the Executive Committee in their original recommendation for this action, which would be to require consideration of a turtle excluder dredge for the scallop fishery, whether that's area-specific, just the Mid-Atlantic or not, we don't know yet. But we would consider working through the PDT and the advisory panel to work out the specifics of that. The second one would be to review and revise the yellowtail flounder accountability measures, which were just approved recently in Amendment 15. They are not effective yet, but are expected to be effective this June. And there were some issues identified later in that process, potentially for some improvements that could be made. So we might look at that in over this year. And at the November Council meeting, the Council included the third option, if you recall, was to consider modification to the Limited Access General Category Northern Gulf of Maine program. That's the specific program that was designed under Amendment 11 to allow limited access for that fishery. I have a slide for each of those three just to refresh your memory of what the different issues are, and hopefully you still maintain your decision from November that these three things are important to consider, and we will move ahead and charge with the next set of meetings. So the turtle excluder dredge is something that's been under development for several years, primarily the industry working with researchers in the region. The dredge has evolved. It's actually on its fifth stage, as I understand, and it has been a process with a lot of people working on it, and the intent is that it would reduce the severity and impact of the scallop dredge on sea turtles that it would encounter on its way down to the seafloor and on the bottom. There is a figure of the dredge and this modification in figure number one on page 2 of that document in your binder if you want to start to kind of get familiar with it, but we're not going to get too specific today. The hope is just to let you know we would be working on this in the next few months and bring it back and fully explain some of the data that we know about this dredge to date. So we would work over, the PDT actually has a meeting on February 2nd scheduled already to kind of dive right into this. We will have to look through the years of data that exist about the impacts on turtles, the scallop resource, and whether or not it's still as effective as the current dredge, as well as there are some differences expected in bycatch species, particularly flatfish, which is great news, potentially. So we will have some back and forth with the advisors and the regional office about how to best calibrate this dredge so we can adequately enforce it and regulate it. We want to make sure to get it in the regs the right way. Second slide just reviews the yellowtail flounder accountability measure. Again, this is not on the books just yet. It's currently under review, and there is a figure on page 2, page 3 in your document to refresh your memory, if you recall, if the scallop fishery exceeds their yellowtail flounder ACL, sub-ACL, different high bycatch areas will close in the March 1st preceding that overage, and they will stay closed for the amount of time, hopefully, to complement whatever that overage was, the same percentage that next year. So at kind of later in the process of Amendment 15, the groundfish PDT began weighing in on this alternative in terms of its effectiveness and raising some concerns. The scallop PDT had some additional ideas, so it's kind of, we wanted almost a, let's look at this again with a little bit more time and more work when we weren't as distracted with other things, and maybe we could do this a little bit better. So this is hopefully that opportunity. There are some issues that have been addressed and raised by primarily the groundfish PDT so far, and we do have a few new ideas, and hopefully through a little bit more work and development, we'll get somewhere where people are more satisfied with it. So the third topic that was included in November would be the Northern Gulf of Maine, kind of relooking at that program. If you recall, in Amendment 11, this limited access program was identified with no landings criteria to recognize that there are sporadic booms and busts in the Northern Gulf of Maine, so many vessels were not going to qualify under the criteria set in Amendment 11 for an IFQ permit. So instead, a second permit was identified with a 200-pound possession limit, and vessels would be restricted to fish just in the Northern Gulf of Maine. If you recall, toward the end of Amendment 11 process, some issues were raised by the agency about the ability to ensure that there was conservation of this tack. It was not going to be exceeded, and it could adequately be enforced. So with those concerns, the council included several provisions, if you will, toward the end that have been viewed as a little unworkable, making the program difficult for these vessels that qualified for this permit. It is going to get a little interesting, again, to have these conversations again and see if, with a few years behind us, if we can solve these pretty much same issues that we had several years ago, if there are some new ideas or not. But primarily the big ones were that all the catch in the Northern Gulf of Maine counts toward the federal tack, even if it's caught in state waters. And this has been a complaint by some people from the beginning. But this was on purpose put in Amendment 11 because it was a way to ensure that the tack wasn't exceeded. The thought then was that it would be very difficult to really confirm whether or not those scallops came out of state or federal waters. The other issue that's been raised is that once the federal tack is harvested, vessels with these federal Northern Gulf of Maine permits are not allowed to fish anymore at all, no scalloping in state waters or federal waters. So this has been viewed as not very desirable, obviously, for the people that want to then fish in state waters. And the other issues have been that catch from the Northern Gulf of Maine area should not count toward an individual's ITQ because it's argued that that resource kind of comes from the larger scallop resource and not actually from the resource up in the Gulf of Maine. And lastly, currently, all scallop vessels, some people think, should be restricted to the 200-pound possession limit, regardless of their permit type, again, to maintain that strategy of a lower possession limit in that region, including limited access vessels. So if you recall, we've talked about all of these things. We talked about them in Amendment 11, but again, some people feel they didn't go down the way they should. Maybe we should rediscuss these things and see if things come out differently. But these are the things that the committee will start working on if you initiate this action today. So if it's initiated today, the PDT advisors and committee will work between now and probably August to fully develop alternatives, get all the analyses together for those three topics, and bring it back to the council in September for final action. If that occurs, possible implementation would be March 1st, 2012, unless we decide that there should be a delay of effectiveness, particularly for that turtle dredge, so that dredges can be made and so forth. In November 2010, the council also identified that as soon as we finish work on this framework, we should immediately begin working on Amendment 16, which would consider IFQs for the limited access fishery. However, during your discussion, you definitely said probably in light of just getting through the stacking and leasing amendment that we considered, we wanted to have a more formal way to gauge interest levels with the public and the industry first. So we would probably in the fall of 2011 through the end of the year and maybe right in the beginning of 2012 start having that discussion and feeling out the industry and where they want to go and if the council wants to do a full-blown amendment or not. And that's all I have.
Doctor?
All right. Thank you, Deirdre. If there are any questions for Deirdre, please ask them. Otherwise, I will make a motion relative to Framework 23, followed by another motion to add another issue to it.
Bob?
Dee, that section struck me under develop IFQ, develop process to gauge interest. I remember that discussion very well. There was a lot of discussion, and I think I said, you know, wouldn't you want to gauge the interest first before you said you're going to implement? And it was nowhere in the motion. So I came away that they were just going to do it. But, I mean, I don't want to open up a can of worms, but I don't remember that part of any motion.
David?
I don't think there was a formal motion, but I remember the discussion quite clearly. And that was a question I wrote down here is how do you plan to reach out to the industry in advance? Are you going to, have you thought about that yet?
Yes, I recall it the same way, I guess. I'll check how this is worded, but I agree. The motion didn't have anything about gauging or specifying the process, but I do believe from the impression anyway that I took away from it was that we were going to scope, but depending, I think we were going to take a pretty hard look at what we heard in scoping before we spent 3 years working on an ITQ. And I didn't hear a very specific direction in terms of how we should do that, so that leaves me under the impression that I'd work on it with the committee and we would decide what to do.
Okay, because, I mean, I remember, I think it was Paul that said we should send a letter to permit holders with some kind of a, you know, ballot or something that they could return, something outside the usual process. And so I do think it should, there should be a pretty good discussion. I mean, for example, I don't think just reaching out to the industry advisors or holding a scoping meeting in a couple of principal ports in this case is probably the way I would go. I would do something a little more formal, like a dear permit holder letter that with a ballot on it, and you know that people could return to really gauge the interest of all the people in the industry, not just the handful that may attend the meetings.
Dave, what's the ballot going to ask? Do you want to go to ITQs? Do you want to talk about ITQs? Do you want to come to meetings to talk about ITQs?
Well, I mean, I think that's what maybe the advisors and the committee should discuss. But, yeah, it should be something that says, would you be interested in pursuing an ITQ amendment for this fishery? And, it, you know, so you can get some idea of whether or not you're going to spend 2 years or 3 years developing an amendment, and then you're going to put it out to a referendum only to find out it goes down in flames with a, you know, very substantial no vote. I mean, something like what happened with the leasing situation. We want to avoid that again, if at all possible. So, I mean, if you didn't get, you know, whether you get just a simple majority or a two-thirds majority back, and you get some sense of whether or not you're basically wasting your time.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, the committee will put quite a bit of time into this. It's a very important initiative, of course, a very important concept. The council made it very clear that it wants to go in this particular direction. So we will fairly soon, after our first meeting, I suspect, if not the second meeting, we'll generate something for the council to consider that would give you a better understanding as to how we would move this forward. We'll also talk to the regional office with Pat's staff just to make sure that her staff agrees with the approach, has some suggestions for the approach, especially in light of the NOAA catch share policy. We need to be respectful of that and whatever that policy has relative to how the service feels as a matter of policy. You know, we should move forward these kinds of discussions. So that's what the committee intends to do, working with the regional office.
Okay. Jimmy?
Just a question of who are you going to send the ballot to?
Again, Mr. Chairman, if I may, that these are the issues we will work on, all right? You need not provide us with specific guidance today or ask questions today. I prefer to have the committee, you know, delve into this with advisors' input, and that way, you know, we'll be in a position to have some really, you know, well-informed discussion, and I suspect some motions to be made following that discussion. So, Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions, I would... this is not a committee motion. This is a motion that will need a second. I would move that the council initiates Framework 23 to the Sea Scallop FMP.
Is there a second? Seconded by Rip. Any discussion? Anyone in the audience? Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smallowitz. Just wondering.
My next motion.
Next motion? Okay. Okay.
Anything further from the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question. All those in favor, raise your hand. One more time, please. Unanimous.
All right, there's one more issue that...
Ron, come on up.
Drew Ron to the microphone. Ron need not speak to this issue because I have a motion to make, and then he's already in position to address it if he cares to after the council asks their questions first. So the motion... it's a motion that relates to an issue that Deirdre and I have discussed, and both of us agree that it is appropriate to have this particular action, possible action, in this framework. Deirdre can speak to it, but before she does, I'll make that motion, which is to include an additional issue to consider in Framework 23, develop alternatives to modify the current VMS regulations to improve scallop fleet operations, that is... for example, how days at sea are charged and how a vessel declares into the fishery. So that is the motion. I would need a second.
Seconded by Terry Stockwell.
And if Deirdre is able to, could you address this to Deirdre?
Sure. I haven't heard from a lot of industry members on this, but recently it's come to my attention that there are some current VMS restrictions that perhaps could be reviewed to make sure that they are as flexible as possible in terms mostly of steaming time and vessels getting the most that they can out of a day at sea, especially in light of the fact that days at sea are lower and lower. But it has a lot to do with just fairness and safety and transiting through areas where you go in and out of the VMS demarcation line. To be clear, we did just consider two alternatives in Framework 22 related to VMS, and I just want to distinguish those were related to pinging frequency to make it more cost effective. The council already debated that and decided no action for those. This is different. Not having to do with the cost of VMS to make it more efficient for vessels. This is instead more related to open area days at sea and making VMS work better, if you will. There are several different examples, and I'm sure as we start talking about this with the advisors and the enforcement committee, other things may come up. So this is pretty general, but the idea is not focused on the cost of VMS and making it more cost-effective, because we kind of already had that discussion in Framework 22, but instead this is more related to the operations of open area days at sea primarily.
Is this, maybe it's not fair to ask you this, but is this similar to the discussions we had in Groundfish, where certain people felt that they had to travel too far to access the fish and they wanted to not have to turn on their days at sea clock until they got to a certain point? Or
I wouldn't want to speak to the groundfish because I'm not sure what their issue was, but the two specific examples that I've been told about would be instead right now the scallop vessels, from what I understand, can steam up from Virginia, for example, way up to Long Island, so long as they stay inshore of the VMS demarcation line. They are not charged for that steaming time. But as they cross through Nantucket Sound, the time that they spend doing that, they are charged for because they're going in and out. So that's just one kind of concrete example of a concern or complaint, if you will, that they don't understand why that's happening. It's still part of a transit, but because of the physical, you know, route that they have to take, they don't see that it is necessary. And then the other one had to do with when a vessel declares into a particular fishery. Right now, as I understand it, that has to happen at port. And maybe having that discussion, do we still have to do that, or can they actually declare as they have already done their transit and then declare into a particular access area or into the fishery at that point rather than earlier? I haven't really gotten into these two specifically, but those are just two examples of things that we would maybe kind of talk out and decide whether they have enforcement concerns or reasons why they have to stay on the books the way that they are.
Anyone on the council? Jimmy?
Well, I just was going to speak to that they did have this issue in groundfish. And they said that you had to do it from the dock. And the reason was because that's how you got awarded days at sea. I don't know how scallopers, they didn't have to qualify for their days, so this could be a legitimate issue. It seems like it's different.
Anyone else in the council? Anyone in the audience? Hey, Ron.
I thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Small, it's Fishery Survival Fund. We just hope the council supports this motion. It's just several minor issues, but they're important. The Fishery Survival Fund is interested in getting ahead of the amendment process, and Drew went down and Dave Fula to the Virginia to Southern Ports and to talk to them about issues. And this is a very important issue to them. And there are people that, you know, you're talking about trying to reach out to the scallop fleet. These are guys that normally can't come up here. And so we're trying to put forward some of their issues, and hopefully the PDT could discuss this. And just for a point of information, the last amendment, that whole issue relative to leasing and stacking, was pretty messy. And we're hoping to get out ahead of it as an industry this time and actually hold, Fishery Survival Fund will hold some meeting workshops facilitated with experts and hopefully put together an industry consensus way ahead of the council process. So just to try to make things a lot smoother, because that last amendment was really a very divisive issue. So we're trying to improve upon the way we bring information to the council. Thank you.
Ron, will you be inviting or extending an invitation to council members if they want to attend those meetings?
Not in the initial meeting, because it's probably going to be a little rugged. But out of that, hopefully then we could have a much more open workshop to all the stakeholders to discuss the issues and have information presented.
Thanks. Is that you, Jim? I see a hand.
Yeah, thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall of Bedford Seafood Consulting. One of my clients is Boat Tracks. And several law enforcement meetings ago, the issue came up about call in and call out and declare into the fisheries. And I guess several issues had occurred, I think primarily with some small boats from the Cape. Didn't actually declare into the fishery, had to return back. And there were some questions about how the days were being counted. And it made a particularly messy type of discussion, to be honest with you. But for quite a while, New Bedford boats, scallopers in particular, going down towards the the elephant trunk area to begin their trip with transit down, declare out of the fishery, transit down, go inshore, get inside the VMS line, and declare into the fishery that they were going to go scalloping, saving some considerable steaming time. Because of these issues where boats were declaring into the fishery improperly, the Law Enforcement Committee made some changes, and I won't be specific on them because they're still a little fuzzy in my mind. I wish Rodney was here to comment on it. But because of that, the changes were made. And I think people are still trying to work within the law and at times maybe putting themselves into some peculiar situations where they're trying to stay inside the VMS demarcation line and actually being in areas they probably shouldn't be transiting. So I would hope that they could smooth this out and make it so that the vessels would have the opportunity to get to the areas closest to their fishing grounds and, you know, take their steaming time from the long transits anyways out of the problem. If a guy's going to steam 24 hours and he's got a boat that only traveling at 8 knots and stuff and you've got another boat capable of doing 12 knots, he's at a distinct disadvantage. So chances are he's going to want to relocate up to a different port or get into a different area where he can declare into the VMS. So I think you need to make it a little simpler and a little more obvious about what is allowable and what isn't allowable at this point before you have guys, like I say, being in areas that they shouldn't be transiting through, particularly when most likely it's going to be an area they're not familiar with. So for the sake of making it a lot more obvious as to where they can go and can't go, there's still people that believe that the demarcation line, the federal demarcation line, is the VMS demarcation line. So, I mean, that still gives you an idea of how well understood this whole problem is. So I think anything the council can do to clarify that and make it a safer issue, then it'd benefit everyone. Thank you.
Okay, back. Hey, Ron, come on up.
Morning, Erickson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support this motion. There has been some issues, such as stitching. We've had guys go one area, all over the catch of Cape May, and turn them out because you have to go in there at high tide. It's a shallow port. And we can't wait till after 4 hours is it done. And consequently, it's caused some confusion. We have to wait to get our notification if the trip's ending. We don't get a trip ending until after the second trip. So I think we can find ways to clarify some of these issues. Stitch is one of them, and sometimes it counts two access areas from two different access areas as one trip. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. I think, you know, to the chair of the committee and staff, if you think you have the time to look into some of these issues, that's what you're telling us, right? Okay. Anyone else on the council? David?
Yeah, I just want to make sure this is a frameworkable item, changes to the VMS.
I'm going to assume that it wouldn't have come here if it wasn't, but that's not a good assumption to make. Do we know that this is frameworkable?
We considered changes in Framework 22, if that helps.
If it's not, we'll find out real quick.
I will confirm that first.
Thank you. Anyone else? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fourteen. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention.
I have no more business. Mr. Chairman, I'll just thank Deirdre for her support, but if she has anything else she feels we need to hear, she's shaking her head no. So that concludes our business on scallops.
Any other business from anyone else? Okay. Thank you, Deke. Dr. Pierce. Brief. Very brief. Okay, we'll roll right in. 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 They will roll right in. They will roll.